An answering machine blinks. Another case, another mansion. But this time, there's something really wrong. Construction teams have fled, site managers replaced again and again. A 20-room house that refuses to be tamed. When investigator John Curley walks into the opulence, he feels it, the weight and the pressure. The mansion does not want to be restored, and all hell breaks loose. Tonight, Anna Maria Manalo joins me on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline to uncover the true events behind her supernatural thriller, Unholy Structure, and the house that made grown men walk away and whispered to those who dared to stay. This is the Paranormal 360. I'm Dave Schrader. Let's unlock the door and enter right now an unholy structure. Anna Maria Manalo, again, thank you for being here with us for this hour. Another fascinating case that you've brought together. And, you know, I mentioned in the last segment of last hour, why not just write these books as a true investigation, as this is what happened? And I know you said 85 to 90% of your book is all based on those facts. I just want people to realize that a lot of the paranormal is guesswork. It's theories, hypotheses, and ideas. So we take what we know. In your case, as an author, you take the reality and then just tape those stray ends together so you can make a narrative in a book, but all based on the reality of what actually took place.
Yes.
And it gives you an opportunity to think about these type of activities as well. Let's talk about Unholy Structure. How did this story come to your attention?
Okay, this was a great one, Dave. And if you haven't had John Curley on your show, you probably should, because he's quite an interesting. He is actually the founder of the Harrisburg Area Paranormal Society, and they're still active to this day. This was a case that came across. Actually, he gave me two choices. I met John online on Facebook, and one bright sunny morning, he finally called me on Messenger. And he said, "You don't know me, but you've been following me. I've been following you. And I'm very curious if you would write a narrative for me." So it went from there. And he told me about two cases. One case I abstained from because I thought it was very much like, let's put it this way. After writing Night Visitants, it was one of those things where I had to take a pause and take a break and wonder, how involved am I getting? So when I started talking to people after that, I always monitored it with the back of my head. Okay, is this demonic? Does it appear to be demonic? You know, demonic cases actually are pretty rare, and you know that.
Right.
But to me, this sounded more like an evil person behind all of it. So when he gave me a choice between one that involved multiple exorcisms and one that involved a mansion that couldn't be restored, I took the latter. I kind of got a little, you know, sheepish. I backpedaled and everything. So to make a long story short,
which is understandable, having we just spoke about that kind of in the first hour, is the fact that what we show attention to sometimes turns the spotlight on us. Do you want to write about something potentially demonic, evil, or a haunted house, right? Mm-hmm. The haunted house feels almost landlocked. Like, we're safe about that because it's there.
Yeah.
If you talk about a force itself, it knows no boundaries. So I completely respect your standing back and taking the lesser of two evils in this case.
So the lesser of two evils was actually pretty evil, as I were to find out. And, and the spookiest part of it is because it had changed owners four times by the time John and I talked, apparently no one really could hold on to the property. And at some point when he was still investigating, he took a picture. And he showed me the photo, which I could not publish in the book because now the owner is gone and we're now into owner number five. And I said, I'm really just stunned because no one would ever have been able to tell that this was a very haunted, infested location from top to bottom, from the basement all the way up to the attic, on the grounds and the cemetery next door. So we're not just talking about an entire house. We're talking the grounds that it was built on, the cemetery, which I understand is very old. It goes back to colonial period. But John then was asked to investigate this by the current owner of the time because they wanted to renovate it and go ahead and make money off of it. It was as simple as that.
And in a lot of cases, folks, I'm sure you've heard of it, the minute we start kind of interrupting the original pattern of a location, even though it might be falling into disrepair, it seems that something can get unleashed. Like we're entering the nest of an unseen being and it returns and is unhappy with the changes that have been made. Is that what was unfolding in this location, that as they were digging through, trying to change things, fix things up, they seem to have stirred a hornet's nest?
Yeah, it seems like every time you move something, and it was just a matter of even just taking the old furniture out in order to redo the floor, the ceiling, paint it, things got so stirred up that these people were refusing time and a half or double time, even on the weekend. They just refused to stay. Once it got a little dark, they were all getting antsy. They were trying to get out, and they walked as one body. I mean, these are burly grown men who just had nothing to do with this place as soon as the sun started to fall.
Really, that says something to you, right? I mean, those are kind of the, as a paranormal investigator, that's the holy grail of a haunted location, that you've got grown men that do not want to stay there past nightfall. It's also, let's be honest, a convenient way to try to get out of work a little bit early too, Anna, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So, so what type of activity was taking place? What was starting to unfold in this house?
Well, the very beginning part, it was just little things from what I understand, tools that started to become missing, furniture that was being moved from one location to the next. Even the manager himself, he would displace things. It got to the point where it started to get annoying. He would make a list of items that he needed to do. He'd turn around, the table was completely empty.
Wow. So apportation, which is things disappearing and reappearing in different places. So some kind of force is at play in this location that's beyond just our suspicions or our imagination, because things are physically being moved about.
Yes. Yes.
Do they have fear immediately, or is it more just kind of shock and awe? Like, what the heck is going on here?
It was more like shock and awe, because these are people are not the type that would just simply run away or get really discombobulated by every single thing. But collectively, it was a feeling they were getting. One of the things somebody mentioned was that they felt like they were always being watched. They were being monitored. And when they looked, there was nobody there. They also talked about the stair in the back. And in the back, there's a servant's area. And where they serve the food, they would bring the food up through these stairs and into the dining room. And there were two formal dining rooms. And they saw this amorphous black cloud issuing from the basement and coming up.
What would you do, folks? What would you do if the place that you've bought and you've sunk your hard-earned money and time into and trying to restore it suddenly unleashes the supernatural? I know there are many of you that are like, yeah, hell yeah, sign me up. But what happens when you actually face that and you begin to see black amorphous clouds moving through your home? How does that really affect and impact you? And I know some of you have actually had that happen. Email me, dave@paranormal60.com. That's dave@paranormal60.com. I want to hear some of your stories. We may share them on an upcoming episode. When we come back, we'll find out how this story begins to evolve. What type of paranormal activity takes place, and does it continue to scare people off? That's next right here on the Paranormal 360. All right. Who doesn't like a good ghost house, right? A good spooky haunted house story. And Anna Maria Manalo has that for us. The book is called Unholy Structure. This is another novel, but it is based, and she said at the beginning, about 80 to 90% of her writing in these books is all the facts. She just, the other 10 to 15% are just the connective pieces that she writes as a narrative author to tie them together and give some peace to the stories. But we're finding out the stories behind the stories. And again, go check out Anna Maria Manalo and all of the great books that she's written. And please do me a big favor, folks. When you buy a book, if you like it, rate and review it, because that goes such a long way to help out our authors. All right. So now that they've got this going, people are leaving. Do the family that or the people that have purchased this property, do they start feeling like maybe we should put this back on the market and get out of it? Or are they resolved? This is our home. We're staying.
Well, the family that bought it was really just as a business venture. They wanted to convert it into an inn. So John actually investigated the background of this particular house and found out it was an inn during Stagecoach days. And that's when things start to really unfold for him. He realized that there were a lot of violence in that area because there was apparently a battle that took place on that soil. Then, when the inn was built, at the time there was a lot of people passing through, there was a particular gentleman who seemed to be the center of all this activity. He was a very strange man. He was watching a particular woman who happened to have come into the hotel around the time he was there. And apparently, something had taken place that was very violent. She passed away. During that time, he was there, and her apparition could be seen in the attic. Strangely enough, as John was looking at this house, he discovered that the back part of this hotel was involved in a fire. So the kitchens in the back, the stairwell in the back, the windows, they're all later built. They were newer than the front. For the plain and simple reason that apparently someone had set fire to cover their tracks.
Oh.
So we have one murder after another. We have a servant who was murdered, the young woman who was staying there. We have a small child that was trapped in the basement, and later on he got some EVPs and some equipment that had detected this child. And interestingly enough, they were very elusive because there's also a butler in the mix. And even though
Wow.
several investigators had seen him, and the van outside where John stationed his wife was also recording what she saw through the windows, guess what? They weren't recorded. And one voice was mimicking his wife. At some point, he thought she needed to use the loo. She needed to get out of the van because they were staking it out overnight. And she actually walked up the stairs and said to him, "I need to go use the ladies' room." And the next thing you know, he calls her on the walkie-talkie. He says, "No, I haven't budged. I'm still out there. I'm still out here. I'm still in the van. I'm watching all your TV, your monitors."
So on the monitor, she's not seeing that, but he is talking to a physical representation of his
Yes,
wife.
yes. And there was something standing behind him, and the man was all dressed up, very erudite, polished looking, very formal. He looked like he was a butler, and he started floating up to the air while John sat there with his equipment right behind him through the window. And his wife said, "You don't see that." And the other investigator was right by her elbow. "Yeah, I see it." And John's over here packing up the equipment, and there it goes up in the air. But then they later on go through the tapes and the monitors. They can't find any evidence of this
That's
apparition.
crazy. And they're physically seeing it, which for listeners, there are different forms of paranormal activity. Like there are close encounters, right? There are close encounters 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. With paranormal encounters, it's the same thing. And we do have and have witnessed things called DVP, which is direct voice phenomena, which you're all standing there and you hear the voice out loud. And in many instances, that voice does not record. But you all heard it physically as though it was standing amongst you. And that is the same with visualization. There are some really strange pieces of video that exist out there where you can see security workers, nurses, and doctors in the hall talking to somebody, giving directions or helping them, maybe even in some instance, putting their hand around their shoulder and easing them back to the room. And the security cameras are showing nobody there, yet the person is directly responding to a physical form. So we know that this happens, but we don't understand the why. How can something physical manifest so much so that we can feel it, touch it, smell it, speak to it, but it can't be recorded? That's what's so phenomenal about cases like this. And again, you found kind of a holy grail story talking about this case. let's go into the next couple of steps with this. You've got so much activity taking place. So many people are witnessing this, right? It isn't just one or two nuts that have bought a house that think it's haunted. Mm-hmm. It is multiple people having strange encounters and experiences throughout the house.
Mm-hmm. And here's the sad part. The owner was a skeptic. The owner had never been to the house after he purchased it. His plain and simple interest was to make it an investment property, to be able to make it run like, just like an inn, the way it was before. And all of this was hurry, hurry, and hush it. Don't tell anyone what you're finding out. Let us know what you're finding out, but please don't share it to the press. Don't do. So here's John, you know, interviewing all these people. Meanwhile, the electrician is running out of there, dashing out of there. There's a gentleman who went up to the attic for the simple reason he had to clean the attic. And guess what happens to him?
What?
Is he
thrown out through the top window like a horror movie? No. Is he dragged down the stairs and screams and blood begins pouring off the walls?
No, not quite. So taken this chair, and his goal was to get all the old furniture out of there. They were all going to go to different shops and consignment, things of that nature. He had a gentleman helping him. They were looking for a pair of chairs, and they both disappeared. They come down the steps after one gets pushed and practically falls down a flight of stairs. So they're now getting creeped out because they're now smelling things, seeing things. Now the furniture is missing. They go out the front door and there's the furniture in the front step. So they carry one. The other one carries the other. The other one topples over as he's doing it. He comes back to help him. Then he decides, oh, who needs two chairs? Who's counting and who's doing inventory? We're the only ones here. He brings it back to his trailer.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm terrified of this place and what's going on inside it. Hey, maybe I should bring some of it home. Right? That's that same kind of mentality that goes into, I open up the milk and smell it and I go, oh my God. And then I take a sip and I'm like, oh, this is horrible. Anna, try this. Right. It's like, let's take something dumb and obviously not good and make sure that we make it even worse by inviting it into our own home. Anna Maria Manalo, our guest, Unholy Structure. Although we are having some fun with it, still a terrifying experience, a book you need to read for yourself to hear about this. And again, I want to hear from you, the lovely darklings of the Paranormal 360 audience. Tell me about your encounters with the strange and supernatural. Would you knowingly take something from a haunted house to repurpose it into your own? We'll talk about that. You can email me, Dave, at paranormal60.com. All right, Anna. You hear these stories. You hear what's going on. This guy is goofy enough that he's going to take a piece of furniture out of the haunted house and put it into his own home. How quickly does he regret that move?
Pretty quickly. So the day that he brings it into his trailer, there he is. He's relaxing in front of the TV. He's looking at what he just got. You know, he's got a treasure. He's got an antique. He's trying to figure out what to do with it. Should I just keep it? It's in mint condition. I dusted it off and cleaned it. Or should I auction it off or do something to it to get a mint? So while that's all happening, he notices all these different things that are happening in the kitchen. So he walks over to the kitchen. He discovers that his gas pilot is out, okay, on his stove. So he's attempting to light it. And eventually he ends up causing a conflagration. Meanwhile, he sees smoke. He turns around and the chair is on fire.
For those of us that don't own a thesaurus, Anna Maria Manalo, what is a conflagration?
It's a fire. He starts a fire on top of the stove.
Okay, so first of all, he notices the gas is going and there's no pilot, and he decides, I'm just going to relight this.
Yeah, poof, there it goes. He tries to snuff it out, right? But he was drinking, so he takes a bottle of all things vodka.
Sure.
And he proceeds to pour it to try to get all that fire out, and it gets even bigger. So now it singes his face. He's rushing out, and he's rolling himself into a ball. People are now coming over, and he said, don't, I think it's going to explode. And it did. So the entire trailer he lives in is now on fire, but guess what isn't?
The house that he took the chair out of.
He had...
And the chair, am I right?
The chair is sitting yards away from the trailer. We have no idea. John has no idea how it made it out there, but it was sitting on the grass intact. Meanwhile, the entire trailer is gone.
But the upside is he still has a place to sit and relax.
Yeah.
Jeez. I like to find that silver lining where I can, Anna. All right, so I've got it. All right, listen, people are listening to the show. They are, you know, everybody's pragmatic. They're trying to skeptically walk through this story. You know, pilot lights go out. It has nothing to do with the paranormal. Maybe a breezy day or the gas had turned off briefly and then turned back on and the pilot just never reignited.
Right, it's happened to me.
I don't want to begrudge this gentleman, but obviously his problem-solving skills are not good when he realizes, let's try to put the fire out with vodka. You know, that again could just be the person involved. It doesn't explain how the chair made it from inside the house to safely outside the house after it explodes. But for the skeptic, I mean, it could be nothing to do with the paranormal, why the house exploded and what happened. It could just be a guy that was not real adept at what to do in a crisis situation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But that chair, what does he do with it? I mean, that's all that he has left. Does he keep the chair? Does he put it on eBay? Does he send it back to the house?
So he ends up in the hospital with second degree burns on his face. And no one can explain to John how he got the chair. He says, I didn't get the chair out. It was the last thing I wanted to do. I just wanted to get the hell out of there. Excuse my language, because I was on fire. So as time
always
went
about
on,
John, always about John.
Yeah.
I'm just worried about me. I was on fire. The rest of us need to know answers, John. So this chair is perfectly preserved. He's in the hospital. What happens to the chair while he's recovering?
Well, I go into another story at that point, because at this point, we've got the electrician outside of the inn. And he is trying to dig a trench to get some electricity in there, because they've been working with generators all this time. This is how old this house was.
Right. So they're bringing electricity to the house.
Yes, they're bringing electricity to the house. So here he was, and he knows his lines. He knows the color of gas. It's a certain color line. He knows the color of electricity, and he doesn't find any. So he starts putting it in, and it's starting to turn into dust. And there's the really strange thing that's a phenomenon in this particular one. The time flies. They look at their watch. It's still daytime. The next thing you know, it's 7 p.m. Several of them cannot figure out why is it that the time is different in that particular location. It either slows down or it speeds up. John always notes triple digits on his phone. They don't know why that happens. So meanwhile, this guy, back to the electrician, he's digging a trench and he hits something. And it looks brown. It's hollow. He wonders if he should just leave it alone because he has no idea what it is, which would mean that he would have to go an extra yard of digging into the night to finally get to head to the street where he wants to go ahead and attach some service to the building. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, I think it's short enough. So he starts digging and it's a femur.
Oh,
it's an animal femur.
Okay. Okay. An animal. All right. So that's not out of the ordinary, right?
Okay.
Animals die. They leave bones behind.
I don't want to put this two and two together. Maybe you can put it together for me because I still don't know what it is. I'm just going secondhand from what he's telling me from, you know, his case.
Right.
But the guy wraps it up in a blanket, throws it in the back of his truck. He takes it home as a trophy. Hmm. He then proceeds to leave. And as he's looking behind him in the rear view mirror, he realizes that the wall next to the inn is a cemetery. And there's headstones in there.
Are we sure that this was an animal femur?
That is the question.
I would say it's probably safe to assume if you're that close, it may not be.
Yeah.
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 Your trophy is Uncle Waldo's thigh bone. Right?
And I, the first thing I thought of is that it probably was.
Oof.
And then he saw a pair of eyes, you know, your standard red pair of eyes.
Yeah.
There was something peering at him, and it stood up to its full height.
Which was how tall?
And he said it probably was about 7 feet tall, which is taller than an average human. And it was all hairy. No, it's not Bigfoot.
Likely story, Anna.
This is where the interview really gets crazy. And I said, John, you're really telling me the truth. He said, I'm trying to tell you the entire story. And this is the God honest truth of what the electrician saw. He said, yes. He swears by it. You can talk to him directly. It was a dog man.
Okay. So a 7 foot tall werewolf dog man looking creature is now staring at him. Again, that's something that makes it real hard to just ignore, right? I mean, talk about feeling intimidated. This fits into like the skinwalker stories, the Native American elementals from the indigenous people. They talk about these protectors and guardians of burial grounds and areas. What is it that they've uncovered? This story just continues to get weirder and weirder. Thank God somebody's here to tell us the rest of it. Stay tuned. We've got one more segment left with our guest. The name of the book, Unholy Structure. Go order your copy. Read it, rate it, review it. That's the right thing to do. We'll be back with more of the Paranormal 360 right after this. Boy, this next 8 minutes is going to go by fast, Anna. I need to know. All right, so this guy's facing a dog man, this huge 7 foot bipedal walking hominid creature. First of all, to process that in your mind is insane, right? This is something you only think of from a horror movie. What happens to him? I mean, he sees something like this.
Well, the man couldn't wait to get the heck out of there. He didn't pause. He didn't try and take a picture. He just got in his truck and he drove around the inn towards the back. He was trying to get out. And apparently, maybe he was confused. Maybe it was dark. And that was at that point when he started seeing red orb on the third floor floating above the inn. So at this point, he's now terrified. Okay. He comes around, finally finds the exit, and he almost slams into John's truck because John is now with his team currently investigating the place. He tells him in a rapid, babbling fashion what he thought he saw. He couldn't. You know, it didn't quite sum up to him, but then he was gone and John took over and they started setting up their equipment again and everything else. John never saw whatever that was in the cemetery. They didn't really get involved in it. They didn't think it was material to the investigation. They had enough. They'd seen too much.
Anna, they didn't think it was material enough, or they were just too chicken to go out there and confront this thing. Because let's not just over-arc them and, oh, they just realized the importance was inside the home. Because to me, that just means I don't care what's going on out there. I'm not investigating a 7 foot tall, walking on its back paws wolf. Yeah. I'm going to just stick with the house because that's something logical.
So the electrician takes home the femur. He breeds dogs. He actually breeds hunt dogs. Of all things.
Okay.
And he was in the process of weaning a 6-month-old Griffon. You know what they are. They're hunting dogs.
Okay.
They're white-haired. They're beautiful animals. But anyway, he was supposedly handing the dog off to a new owner who was coming at noon. Early that morning, he was feeding the horses. He was feeding the other two dogs. These are very friendly animals. They don't normally, and I know them for a fact because I've met a few of these types of dogs. I'm into dogs. They do not attack each other. There is nothing in them that would make them attack each other. But what happened in the course of it was just so terrifying. And he can only allude to the fact that the older dog had picked up the femur that he had accidentally dropped off of the side of the truck. And it ran off with it. And in the final analysis, the puppy got out. And when the older dog intercepted the puppy.
Right.
It killed it.
Oh no. So it's almost like whatever was attached to this bone just possessed, for lack of a better term, this
Made the
poor
dog
dog.
berserk.
Wow. Yikes. You got to read the book for more information and more detail. We are just skimming the surface on these books, giving you a concept of what is going on with this tale. We have about 4 minutes left together, Anna. This house, why would you think it wouldn't want to be restored? Does it just want to be left alone? And when we say this house, are we talking about spirits within it, or the property, the house itself, is almost a conscious entity?
You know, it is almost like a conscious entity. I mean, every room supposedly is haunted. The gentleman, the oldest member of the team, not the investigative team, but the crew that was originally there, he saw something through the window and it was trying to enter through the glass. That's when he knew that whatever it was disembodied, it was not alive. And he said it looked like a dog man. So that was probably, with the electrician, the second sighting, which lends credence to what this guy was talking about. You know, no one believed this guy because John never saw the creature himself. But they said that there were so many things manifesting. And I don't want to give a spoiler about what happened at the end of the book, but there's definitely more uncanny stuff.
Come on, Anna, tell us the truth. Did you survive
Did he? No one
it?
died at the end of the book except for the little puppy. Yes,
Oh, that's brutal. All right. With the last few minutes that we have remaining, did they ever feel that they got a solid answer as to what happened? Were they able to calm the energy and spirits of this home,
No,
or
they were not. No, the
no?
short end of it is that after the investigation was over, they shared all the information that they had. He had a formal meeting with the property manager and then the owner, and the owner said, okay, at this point, I'm going to sell it. His recommendation was to have the church take over and do a series of cleansings. They were going to bring in some healers, some mediums, and I don't think the owner was into that. So that all was kind of poo-pooed. And to this day, it's empty. It's still there. I know because I
Really?
saw it. I drove over.
Is that a place you would yourself want to investigate and put yourself
No.
into?
Oh, no. Oh, no, Dave. No. There was
Really?
something very eerie. It was almost like as soon as my car was only 10 minutes away, the vibe was very different. Very different.
So it was almost this sense of foreboding you were picking
Yes.
up on empathetically before you got there. How do you get
Yes.
past just hearing the stories and letting that affect you and judging it against a real palpable danger?
Yeah. It's a tough one. It really is a tough one. And I don't know how you could sell something like that's so infested.
Yeah, it certainly leaves a lot of questions out there. And the house is still standing. They've never been able to complete their work on it.
It's beautiful. I mean, it's
Wow.
huge.
What a tragedy. Well,
Yeah.
maybe, Anna, maybe I'll need to make a trek out there and you'll have
Okay.
to take me to the property and kick me out the door, and I'll see if I can figure something out and stay a night or two in this haunted haunted home and see if we can get some answers.
I'll PM you the picture and the location.
All right, sounds like a plan. Then just get the kiddie pool filled with holy water, so when I run out, I have something to dive into for clearing. Anna, thank you for
Luck.
coming on and sharing the stories with us, and for making sure that these parts of history are not forgotten, that we do get to hear about these in an entertaining and educational way as well. I appreciate the work you do as an author and a researcher, so thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to come on your show. I know you're very busy. It's been wonderful. Thank
Always
you.
a pleasure. Always a pleasure catching up. And we've got more stories to share, and we will do so with Anna Maria Manalo in the future. Remember to get a copy of the books we discussed this evening, The Infernal and Unholy Structure, and remember to rate and review them. Creaking floors, vanishing crews, whispers behind stone walls. The mansion stood tall, but what lived inside refused to be silenced. Was it haunted, cursed, or simply alive? My thanks again to Anna Maria Manalo for bringing these eerie real-life accounts to light. For now, we shut the door on this haunted hall, but the structure still stands. Until next time, Darklings, I'm Dave Schrader, and this is my Paranormal 360.